Last couple of days about some aspects of Tumas Kohanim. Yesterday we spoke a little bit about the status of a goses, of somebody who is in the throes of death. And now to put it all together, let's talk about what is the status of a Kohen being present or being involved at the time when you have somebody who is in the throes of death, somebody who is in the stages of Gesisa. We know in the very beginning of this week's parsha we learn Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav, that a Kohen is not allowed to defile himself to become Tameh to a dead body. What about when somebody is still alive? As we said yesterday, a goses kechai l'chol dvarim. However, it is clear that we are nearing the end. So the question is, what is the story with regard to that? We have a Gemara, Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun Ches, where the Gemara tells us that in the days of Chazal, they used to have very strong wine. And in order to dilute it, in order to temper the power, the potency of the wine, they used to put some water into it, a certain amount of ratio of water versus wine, and that made it edible, that made it reasonable for people to be able to drink. So the question that the Gemara raises there is, obviously when you have a non-Jew who pours wine, so we assume that that's going to be Yayin Nesech or Stam Yenam, and we try to stay away from that. What about if you have, not that the non-Jew pours the wine, but the non-Jew pours the water into the wine and does the dilution process? So should we assume that already makes it into Stam Yenam, and the wine is problematic? Or do you say, no, he didn't really handle the wine, he just handled the water that was in turn making the wine drinkable? So that is the question the Gemara has, and the Gemara comes to the following conclusion. The Gemara says it is usser. Why? What can be the problem with that? Says the Gemara, Mishum, Leich Leich Amrino Nazira Sechar Sechar Lekamra Lo Sikrav. What does that mean? A whole line in Aramaic. Basically what it means is, when you have a Nazir who has taken upon him or herself that they are not going to drink wine, so we say to a Nazir that not only are you not allowed to drink wine, but you know what? Stay away from the vineyard. Don't get anywhere near the grapes, because one thing can lead to the next, and you never know what's going to happen after you get involved in something that's close to wine. So therefore, we assume that you have to stay away. The Rambam writes this in Hilchos Nazirus, that when we talk about the laws that govern what a Nazir is allowed to do and what perhaps not, so the Rambam says clearly, Midivrei Sofrim Aser, we say that Midirabbanan, there is a prohibition on a Nazir, Lamod B'moshav Shosei Hayayin. A Nazir is not only prohibited from drinking the wine himself, but he's not allowed to go to a bar, he's not allowed to go to a lounge where everybody's sitting around and drinking wine, because we're concerned. We have to be careful, we have to be very overly vigilant, that maybe by sitting in such a place, that will lead to the next thing, which is that you'll take a drink yourself. So that is a concept the Gemara has in a number of places, that sometimes one has to be careful to take a step back and make sure not only that they don't violate the Aveira itself, but that they take precautionary measures to make sure that they will not come to violate it as well. So on that line of thinking, the Gemara has a Maseches Nazir as well, a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. We know that a Kohen is not allowed to defile himself, he's not allowed to become Tamei by coming in contact with a dead body. What about the Kohen coming in contact with a Goses, with somebody who's at the very end stages of life? Should we assume that a Kohen has to refrain from being in the close proximity of such an individual because we know what the next step is going to be, we don't know exactly when that moment is going to happen, or should we assume, no, when it happens, the Kohen will leave the room, but until that point, the Kohen is no problem, there's no prohibition for him at all to be there. This is a disagreement, a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yochanan comes to the conclusion that it is permissible for a Kohen to be in the proximity of a Goses. The only prohibition is for him to come in contact with the dead body itself. Tosis there on the Daf writes that he adopts the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore it would be permissible for a Kohen to come in contact with somebody who's in the stages of Gesisa. How does this find itself quoted, the halacha, in Shulchan Aruch? So if you look in Yerideya Simon Shin Ayin, the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, Goses enem etamei achetetze nafsho. Obviously a Goses is not considered to become Tamei until he's actually no longer alive, but as long as he's alive, he's still considered a human being, lechal dover. Umikal makom, however, aser li kanes lebayi sheyesh bo Goses, says the Shulchan Aruch, although a Goses is considered kechai l'chol hadvarim, he's considered like a live person, a Kohen must refrain from coming in contact with a Goses because we know what's about to happen. And we don't know when that moment is going to be, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch warns us that a Kohen does not have a right to be there. The Ramah says, v'yesh matirim. The Ramah says, obviously we know there are those who are lenient on this issue, as we just mentioned from the Gemara. However, he says, his suggestion is, v'tov l'achmir. The Ramah says, Ashkenazic Jews should try and be machmir and should try to be careful not only to remove themselves from being in contact with a dead body, but also to remove themselves from any interaction with a goses as well. So the Pischei Tshuva there on Yerodea discusses what about an EMT and a paramedic and a Hatzalah volunteer or a doctor who happens to be a Kohen, and there's a goses at the very end of life who needs some help. So what should they do? So the Pischei Tshuva quotes that most Achronim assume that if you have the capability to help such a person, you should do whatever it takes to help them. Even though you might get stuck in the room at the time of the Misa, at the time when the person is no longer going to be alive, and then it's prohibited for you to be involved. But still, he says, this is something that because of a spek sveka pikuach nefesh, who knows, maybe you're going to be able to extend life a little bit longer because of your medical expertise, because of your medical knowledge. We would assume that that would be permissible. That is what the Pischei Tshuva writes. There was a further discussion. Some say, what if there's an alternative? What if there's another doctor or another EMT who is equally as capable as you are and happens to be available as well? Should we assume that you have to make sure that person goes on the call and you refrain from being involved in such a call? That is an interesting question, but the general principle that the Pischei Tshuva writes is because lo mikol ha'adam zoche lehisrapos. Not everybody's hands always have the schus to be able to heal others. Some doctors get the job done very well, and some doctors maybe make a mistake more often than others, and therefore it's not their fault. But says the Pischei Tshuva, you never know. How can you send away this EMT because he's a Kohen? Maybe he has the magical hands who are going to actually be more helpful to the patient than somebody else. So that is the general concept that we have. So the situation that I was in a few weeks ago was, there was unfortunately a goses in the house. It was clear that this person was at the very end of life, clear that they were dying, and there were many Kohanim who were present. First of all, because the Kohanim were family members, so they were all there, but also because there were a number of Kohanim who were on Hatzalah, who were volunteers, who were there in the house as well. And then there were a number of Kohanim who came also to make a minyan before the person passed away. So this was the question. I walked into the house and I said, first of all, off the bat, any Kohen that's here just for the minyan should certainly leave the house. There's no question about it. There's no halacha l'moshe misina that you need a minyan to say vidui. It's a nice thing, but obviously this is something that a Kohen should not defile his kahuna because of trying to have a minyan at the end of life. So those Kohanim left. Any Kohen who's an EMT who feels that they have nothing they can add to the situation, they just came right away on the call, but really now they're not needed because the doctors came, so they also should excuse themselves. But the question was, what about all of the family members who were there, who were Kohanim, who ended up standing around the bed and they were singing beautiful songs, and it was a very emotional, very moving experience. The question was, do they have to be told that they should leave as well? Obviously, after the person dies, the grandchildren, all the boys in the family have to leave. However, while the stages of gesisa were progressing, should we assume that the family members had to leave the room as well? So we turn to a Gemara in Baba Basra Kuf Nun Vav, where the Gemara tells us that in general, we have formal legal acts called kinyanim that have to be done when you want to transfer ownership of an item from one person to another. So you can do it with a shtar, you can write a contract that I hereby give this chair or this table to the other person, and that's the way it will legally be binding. What about when you have somebody on their deathbed and they want to make certain provisions with regard to the Yerusha, with regard to all that they're leaving over? They want to give it to this person, to that person, they want to switch it from one to another. So we should say that the same legal contract that's necessary to transfer items from one person to another should be necessary for this person to also draft a document that will say exactly what they have in mind, and that will transfer the ownership from one person to another. However, the Gemara says, imagine, you have somebody on their deathbed, and you're going to tell them, hey, we need to bring a lawyer here. You want to change your mind about the Yerusha? We need somebody to sit here and document everything, and we need to make sure it is legally binding, and you have to say it this way and that way and sign your name 100 times. Can you imagine what's going to be going through the person's mind? They're going to be thinking, I'm going to die before I get to this lawyer, before I finish all of this. And therefore, the Gemara says we have to be concerned that the patient is going to be anxious, is going to be tormented, they're going to be tense and distressed over the fact that the money's not going where it should go. And therefore, the Gemara says we have a special rule when it comes to a person at this stage of life. And that is, divrei shchiv meira kichsuvim v'chimsurim dami. We assume that when a person is at that stage of life, whatever they say, we're going to listen to. Obviously, they have to have their minds, their faculties. If a person is in the end stages of dementia and they say all kinds of things that don't really correspond to reality, obviously we don't listen. But a person who understands what's going on and they have their faculties till the end, if they make some sort of demand about where money should go, we allow that to be a transaction that is legally binding, even though it didn't follow the general rules of how transactions are supposed to occur in Jewish law. Why is that? So the Gemara says, because we have to be concerned, Shema Titarev Daito. We don't want to be responsible for the person who's already anxious at the end of life to die a second earlier. If we're going to add to any anxiety that they have by telling them we need a lawyer, we need this, we need that, we don't want to bother them at all. And therefore the Gemara says we're going to listen to them. If they say something, we're going to listen immediately. Similarly, in Hilchos Shabbos, we're told the following. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say somebody passes away on Shabbos, and all of the relatives of this person live very far away from the hospital. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Asar lo marid le'eni Yehudi, you're not allowed to send a taxi to ask a non-Jew to go do a malacha for you outside of the tchum and ask and tell the family members to inform them of the fact that their family member passed away. There's no reason. What are they going to do on Shabbos? Why would he do that? That's Amir la'akam. However, he says, Chola detakif le'alma, what if you have somebody who comes into the hospital, fatally ill, they know they're holding at the end, and they ask you to please call their relatives because they'll be more comfortable if the relatives will be with them at the very end. Says the Shulchan Aruch, obviously you would be allowed to send a Nachri to pick up the relatives in such a scenario because that will add to the calm atmosphere of the Chola. And even though it might not add time to the person's life, but we always have to be very concerned about Yisuva Daita, about making sure the person is calm, about not adding to the stress, not adding to the worry, to the anxiety at all. We have to make sure that the person is not going to be negatively affected or impacted by the psychological torment that they might be having should we not call their relatives. And similarly, the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, you have a woman who's giving birth. And the Gemara says this woman is a Suma. She's blind, so she can't really see. And she's nervous. She doesn't really know what's going on. She knows the doctors and nurses are all there, but she doesn't really know what's happening because she can't see. She's blind. And she tells us, please turn on the lights. I just have a feeling that it's not light enough in here. I have a feeling that we need to do something in order that you should be able to do your job better. So the Gemara says, well, it's a strange request. You can't even see. Us, the doctors and nurses, made a decision that we have enough light and we're just as well able to do the job as well as we normally do. But because the Gemara says we have a concern of Yisuva Daita, the woman's going to be nervous, and the woman's not going to do the job of birthing as well as she otherwise would because she has this on her head, and it's a situation of Pikuach Nefesh, says the Gemara, in a case like that, we'd be allowed to turn on the lights in order to make her more comfortable, even though it is totally unnecessary, even though it's not going to help us at all to do our job. We can do the job just as well without them. But still, the Gemara says we would allow that because of Yisuva Daita, which leads, there was a major, major dispute 250 years ago among many, many Gedolim. The Shalomeshev was involved, and Rav Shlomo Kluger, and all the other great Gaonim of the time in Europe were discussing that there was a chassid in the city of Zlotchev, I don't even know where that is, but there was a chassid who got sick one Shabbos, and he was very distressed over the fact that he couldn't get in touch with his Rebbe to ask him to be mispalel for him. So he asked somebody to please immediately on Shabbos send a note, a telegram or something to the Belzer Rebbe, the Sar Shalom, that he should be mispalel for him. And the question erupted, was that something that was permissible or perhaps that was Chilul Shabbos? There's no real reason to do that. It's nice that people should daven for you, but to send a telegram on Shabbos to the Rebbe that he should daven for you, is that something we would allow? And the Kaf HaChaim talks about also a similar story about the story that one time there was somebody who was sick and one of the Mekubalim sent a kameya that he wrote on Shabbos in order for the person to feel better, something like this. These are questions that we have to deal with, and the crux of the issue basically is, should we have a right to be mechal Shabbos or to violate averus in the Torah because we think that they will help the person's emotional stability? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. We would violate Shabbos, we would violate other halachos in order to do so. There is a famous psak there, that Rabbi Yashiv gave, a very contentious one, but we know that today they're able to put, for somebody who has heart spasms, I think it's called, they're able to put a defibrillator inside. It's one device. The defibrillator and the pacemaker can be all in one. So some people have it, that if the heart should ever stop in its regular rhythm, immediately the defibrillator will kick in. You don't need an external device to take care of it. So the question is, now you have a person who had this put in 5 years ago, and now it turns out that the person is so much sicker than they were at the time, and now they're end-stage cancer, and they say, should they get to a point where their heart is not going to be functioning anymore, they don't want that the defibrillator should be activated. They don't want to be revived. They would be happier just to leave themselves alone and not have the extended suffering continue on longer. So this was a major question. Do you have a right to deactivate the defibrillator once it's already inside of the body, or perhaps not? It doesn't mean you're deactivating it while it's working. Right now, it's dormant. Right now, it's doing nothing. But should something arise later on, it will immediately kick in. So Rabbi Yashav was asked this question, are we allowed to do that or not? And he said he thought that you weren't allowed to do it. A very big issue today, whether or not you can or you can't. However, said Rabbi Yashav, if it's causing the patient to be distressed, if it's causing the patient to sit and worry every day, what's going to happen if my heart stops and then I'm going to have to be shocked with the defibrillator and it's bothering the patient so much that that is going to be the outcome and the result, then says Rabbi Yashav, certainly you're allowed to do it because of Yisuva Daita, Shalotei Tariv Daito. We don't want the person to be tormented or anxious because of a worry that they have emotionally or a worry that they have psychologically. That is good enough of a reason to allow us to do this procedure. That's what Rabbi Yashav said. So coming back to our story here, Reb Shlomo Zalman writes in the Nishmas Avram, and they quote him in the Nishmas Avram, my father has told me the same thing, that he felt the same, that when you have, let's say, a person at the end stages of life, a goses, and generally the Shulchan Aruch says that a Kohen should not only stay away from a dead body, but a Kohen should also stay away from a goses as well. So what would you say about family members who are there in the room at the end of life and the person is still conscious and they're still awake, and when you tell them to squeeze your hand, they squeeze the hand, and now you're sitting and singing with them and you're giving them comfort at the end of life. Would you tell all the Kohanim in the room who are giving comfort to this person and emotional stability, would you tell them all to leave the room now because the person is about to die, like the Rama says, you're not allowed to be in a room with a goses? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and my father said the same thing, suggested absolutely not, because if we go out of our way and we would even allow Chilul Shabbos under some circumstances, we would even allow other averos to be violated for the sake of Yisuva Daita, that the person's mind should be at ease, then certainly we would tell the Kohanim they shouldn't run out of the room when the person is a goses. If they are providing a service for the Chole, even a non-medical service, but if they are providing something that is giving the Chole emotional stability, certainly we would tell people that they should not run out of the room at that time. And that's why at the time I told the Kohanim who are closest to the family that since they were singing and they were giving comfort to the person, they should stay there. But anyone else who was unnecessary certainly should have been advised to leave the